This is the Permission to Write podcast, and I'm your host, Ashley M. Coleman, author of Good Morning Love. Join us each week as writers discuss more than writing. You'll hear from me as well as the occasional guest on craft, publishing, life, and culture. We hope you enjoy the show.
So we are very excited to be back. This is really the beginning of season two, y'all. I'm thrilled to be back. We needed a little bit of a pause because sis was tired and needed to regroup a little bit. But I am thrilled to be kicking off season two of the podcast with a guest today. I'm so excited to have with us an amazing academic and writer who is really going to be talking to us about the awesome new book that's coming February 27th. So I want to read a little bit here because I like to give accolades and praise where it's due. So I'm going to read a little bit of the bio here. So Sheena C. Howard, PhD, is a professor of communication. She is an award-winning author, filmmaker, and scholar. In 2014, Sheena became the first Black woman to win an Eisner Award for her first book, Black Comics, Politics of Race and Representation. She is also the author of several critically acclaimed books and comic books on a range of topics. So really quickly, I just want to say hey, and thank you so much for joining us today.
No, thank you. Thank you. I really, really appreciate it.
Awesome. So I'm always thrilled to kind of like get into a little bit of a different world here. I feel like before we get into the amazing book that you wrote in Academic Brandon, I want to know about your love for comics. And how it developed. How did you get into comic books? And is that something you feel like you're sharing with the next generation as well?
So the way I got into comics was through the Boondocks comic strip. Now, most people know the show because the show is more popular. But before the show on Comedy Central, it was a comic strip that I used to read. And when I did my dissertation at Howard University, I started my PhD when I was 23. So I was really young in a class with just people that were a lot older than me, or at least a few years older than me. And so when they said you have to know what your dissertation is going to be about, I was freaked out. And I was like, what am I going to do this long extended research paper on, like a 200 page research paper? And I just started looking around me and thinking about what did I like? Because I knew I wouldn't be able to write a dissertation without doing it on something I liked. And so I just happened to be reading the Boondocks comic strip. And that was my entry point into the world of comics. So my love of comics is a lot different than the typical fan of comic books and also the typical creator or writer in the comic space.
I love that. And I love talking about like representation within that space, because clearly, like, you know, we are often missing as marginalized people. I've even seen where there's been some new comic book stores owned by Black women opening up, which I feel like is just so instrumental. I feel like there might have been one in Philly at some point.
Yeah, unfortunately, it closed last year.
Oh, wow.
I stay in touch with the owner, and it closed like a year after the pandemic, I believe. So big loss for Philadelphia. You know, it's hard out here running businesses, running a brick and mortar store, especially bookstores and in the comic space.
Oh, absolutely. And the pandemic, unfortunately, has done a number on so many small businesses. So if you all are listening, I really feel like go support your small and independent and local stores, because they really are a beacon for the community. I can't say enough about individual indie bookstores and local bookstores around.
For sure.
So I love that, you know, the dissertation really started with this. And then, you know, we want to talk a little bit about the new book that's coming. So it's Academic Brandon, a step-by-step guide to increase visibility and authority and income.
Us academics like that colon.
I know, but you have to have like the, you know, a little bit of the explainer of like, okay, what exactly are we about to get into? And I feel like those are all areas that really all of us are trying to figure out in this new age. And so I feel like, first and foremost, what made you decide to put Power Your Research, the Power Your Research workshop, into book format? Because it's kind of based off of that. I feel like other people try this and it can feel a little lacking. But your book feels really actionable. Like, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I really want to work along to this. So what made you want to do this medium of the Power Your Research workshop?
You know what? I'm glad you said that, that the book makes you feel like you want to work along with it, because it is written in steps. Do this first, do this next, And the interesting thing about that is that's not the original book I wrote for Bimbella. The original book was like something else. And then they were like, no, this is not going to work. You need to do it in a step-by-step guide. And candidly, I wasn't happy about that. And I had to like rewrite the book within like 6 weeks or something crazy. And I rewrote the whole book. And then we had to, after that, I had to go back through it line by line with another editor before it went to another editor. But the book is better for it. And that's why you have editors who know better than you do. And most times you should be listening to the people who are paid to be the editor. And so I'm so glad you said that. Thank you. The book really could be for anybody looking to build their brand and increase their income. But since I run an academic branding company, and when you're selling something, having a target audience helps you sell the thing. So the book is for academics, people with master's degrees and PhDs, but really anybody, any creative trying to build a brand can follow the same exact steps and get the results.
I love that. That was actually going to be one of my questions, because you clearly state in a lot of the intro of the book, like, you know, that this is for folks who are in master's PhD programs, a lot of folks looking for tenure and that kind of really being their path. But as I was going through it, I was like, it's cool. That's for me too. Yeah. which is, so I feel like it's going to be applicable to so many people, regardless of their field. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you speak to an important point around, like, our audience is a lot of, you know, essentially like writers who may be published, may not have been. There's like varying levels. But I think it's important even to talk about that small piece of the publishing process where you wrote one thing that wasn't necessarily it and kind of had to go back to the drawing board. And I think it's so key that you trusted yourself, right? Like, in that you were able to come back to the table and write something really worthwhile and really great, even if it wasn't exactly what you thought.
Exactly. Because now I just have a whole other book that I can write after this, the way that I originally intended for it. But it's definitely a better book, having gone through that process and having to rewrite it so many times. This is the most practical book I've ever written. And, you know, I always tell people, I don't teach people things that I have not actually done. Like, I run companies, at multiple six figures at this point. And so, you know, I see a lot of people out here implying or pretending to be something they're not in order to grow on social media. And that's not it. Just do great things and then tell people how you did it. And you will be able to show up in a lot more healthy way, and you'll feel good about what you are doing instead of pretending to do something or be someone else. And that's really what, you know, my social media platform is about. And this book is about teaching people the things that I've actually done, because I've come a long way and I'm a teacher at heart, and I want to help people get to the next level.
Oh, I love that. I feel like the book comes at this like really important time, specifically as we look at Black women struggling in academia. So if you look at front page news, things like the ousting of Claudine Gay at Harvard to the untimely death of Antoinette Candia Bailey at Lincoln University in Missouri. So did you have any of that in mind when writing the book? Clearly, those are newer stories that have happened, you know, once the book was already configured. But in general, do you come to this work of like branding yourself outside of a university as almost like a safe space for Black women, or alternative to only being able to succeed within like the confines of an institution?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we could spend the rest of the podcast talking about this, but I'll sum it up to say this book is for any academic looking to protect their future, okay? If you are a faculty member and that is the path that you have chosen, you're going to get to the point where you can either get what they call tenure or not, which tenure is supposed to mean a job for life, but it, in actuality, it doesn't mean that with the rate at which universities are closing down. And there are too many PhDs and not enough full-time positions. So what academic branding is showing people is that there is a different way, an alternative way, a viable way, and a completely feasible way to make more money than any university can ever pay you anyway. So if you are a faculty member and you want to go out and make six figures on your side thing, this book will teach you how to do that. If you just have a master's degree or PhD and you're not even in academia anymore, this book will teach you how to leverage your academic experience so that you can go out here and make six figures plus. The way I see higher ed going is that it's getting more and more and more difficult to be a faculty member and do this as your full-time job. And so what that means is for Black women, it's even more difficult because it was already difficult for us before. And so the only 5% of tenured faculty are Black women, 5%. And so I am fortunate enough to be a full professor, which is the highest promotion that you can get in academe, but I am rare. It's not typical to be able to get that level of promotion as a Black woman. And this is an alternative path for people that really want to level up and make an impact in the world with their area of expertise. And I don't, you know, people with PhDs and master's degrees took the time to study something in depth to be an expert. And I believe the world is a better place if they understand how to have a big platform. Ooh. And now is the time. Now is the time. We have listen, you can literally log onto an app and start talking to a lot of people. It's crazy. This is crazy. And I don't want people to miss this moment.
Yeah. And you talk about that in the book where, like, you know, when you're talking about mindset, about how there are people who don't know anything really, but they understand how to market and how to use social media. And why not take that opportunity when you actually are an expert in the field to share that information?
Yeah.
It can be scary how quickly, like, false information spreads just yep. because a TikToker said it very, like, emphatically.
Yep. Yep. Said it with conviction and everybody believed it and it was wrong.
Oh, my goodness. It is crazy.
Yes.
So I love that you talk about building a brand in relation to entrepreneurship. I think it's so important, specifically, again, just coming from a writing perspective. You said, make no mistake, like, building a brand is about learning entrepreneurship.
It is.
So can you just speak a little bit to that? I mean, you talked about running two businesses. Where did that click kind of happen for you in your own journey of realizing that you were a business owner?
So everybody has a brand, whether you've been trying or not. So when you Google your name, whatever comes up, that's your brand. That's your online presence. If you don't like what comes up in Google, do the work to change it. Use this book to create the thing that you want to see come up in Google. And as you go on the process of being intentional about building your brand, it is entrepreneurship, because building a brand requires you to invest in your brand so that you can grow it. And growing your brand requires you to confront mindset issues. And if you have a PhD or a master's degree, your mindset is distorted by higher ed. And there are some really, really major things that you have to unlearn. And I'm not saying this is good or bad, it's just a fact. That the longer you stay in the educational system, the further you get away from understanding certain things about entrepreneurship and building a brand. It's just like, even in academia as a faculty member, it's generally not okay to talk to your colleagues about the fact that you want to be on the news, you want to get media coverage, you want to do TED Talks and be on NPR. It's kind of like, they have this saying where it's like, if you're a scholar on TV, then that means you're not doing your research, which is not true. But But that's kind of the mentality in higher ed. And we should be way past that. With the tools we have around us, we got to get out of that mindset. If we want to grow and leave a legacy and build something that's going to change people's lives with our work.
Oh, absolutely. And there's all these parallels, especially because folks that typically go for masters and PhDs are also writers. And so I see it as a fiction writer myself within our own community of just that balance between the art and the business of the art. Yeah. And I think a lot of authors struggle with that. And really being able to lean into that. They want to be the greatest writer.
That's so true. That's a great parallel. I love that.
Yeah. But it's kind of like you still got to do the work for people to actually know that the writing exists. So.
Yeah, listen, you have to be on social media. Mm-hmm. You have to be on social media. Every creator I know, they would rather just be creating their stuff.
Right.
But if you want to create your stuff for people and you want them to buy it and you want to create a community of people that love your stuff and leave a legacy, we have this tool called social media. And if you can not have feelings about it, mm-hmm. and just deal with the facts that this is going to help you reach those goals, yeah. you'll be further along quicker.
Ooh,
right? And I am going to use whatever tool is available. Something else comes out next year, I'm going to use whatever tool is available to get to the vision that I have for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I'm really interested in, the idea of being trained as entrepreneurs. So like you talk about, like when you're coming up through like institutions, through like higher ed, there is this thought of like leaning away from self-promotion. But I feel like I know I was invited to a journalism class at Temple to talk about kind of like my alternative path to journalism.
Nice.
Cause like I'm like a J school dropout, but then like started a blog and still got journalism opportunities. So do you feel like entrepreneurship is becoming more prevalent in curriculums at all? Like, are they adding it into it? Cause I feel like my professor was kind of just like maybe like forward thinking. But I'm wondering, because that was 100 years ago now, but I'm wondering if that is something that's becoming more a part of curriculums.
I think academia moves very slow. It's behind. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while for academia to catch up. It takes a while for the educational system to catch up. I think if you're not, I think if you're in fields like my field, communication, you're teaching radio and podcasting and journalism, and you're not teaching students about entrepreneurship, you're doing them a disservice, right? You're doing them a disservice.
For sure.
But I do see spots and pockets where that is prioritized, but it's not the norm. It should be the standard in certain fields, I feel. Right. If you really want to set young people up for success, they need to know how to create their own thing with the tools that are around us. If their goal is to reach people, I mean, if you're a writer, your goal is to reach people. I think that's everybody's goal. It might not even be to make money, but to reach people, you have to be using these tools.
Well, I feel like the book is a great tool, right? So even if these things aren't prevalent within actual classes, I think picking up the book is going to be helpful to anybody looking to figure out how to really move forward and build, their brand. When we talk about this idea around like the balance between research and promoting yourself, how are you balancing both? Like, what's your approach to making time for building a robust business and like a great speaking career and showing up in media and things like that? But also the fact that you're a full professor, right?
And a single mom.
And a single mom. How are you finding, what's your approach to balancing it all?
So depending on the university that you are at as a faculty member, you have certain constraints and you don't. And so for me, I'm not a person that's impressed by a school's name. Mm-hmm. I never was like, I need to go to these Ivy Leagues. I need, right? Because I always understood that the name on the degree doesn't matter. I matter and what I do with the name on the degree. And so the university that I'm at, Rider University, is a small university that most people listening to this will have never heard of unless you're from New Jersey or maybe even Philly. And so it doesn't have the name recognition, but it's a perfect place for me because they support me. They allow me to be out here talking about my businesses, doing speaking engagements. When I know that certain universities, they actually have a percentage of time that faculty can go out and do speaking engagements. And once you get to that percentage, you can't do any more for the rest of the year. And so think about what people really need to think about is the university or just your job's goals and mission. Do they align with your own personal goals and mission? And are you giving something up just because of the name of an organization that you don't own? Because there might be a better fit for you to pursue your personal things and for you to work at this university or organization. I think that's important. You know, if you have a full-time job, but you also have these creative pursuits, these other things you want to do, if the full-time job is draining you to the point where you can't work on your creative stuff at all, that might not be the place for you. Because I think people would be happier if they were actually pursuing things that were meaningful to them.
No, absolutely. You know, it really speaks to the idea of like oftentimes we go to the flashy thing, you know, not thinking about how it really aids you. I'm like, I'm even having a moment of conviction myself. Because I'm like, anyone who knows me knows that I work in music and also write. And sometimes I'm just like, oh, this thing takes up so much time. But mm-hmm. to your point, it's been something that has been able to facilitate the work that I do outside of the gig, right?
So that's right.
Those are very important evaluations to kind of make for yourself because we have to live.
That's right.
We got to eat, which I love that you talk about that in the book.
Right.
So when we talked about, you know, our little past the colon piece, it also right. included monetizing, right?
Right.
So can you speak to that a little bit? I feel like, you know, I like that you get real about money because as women and specifically as marginalized women, at times I feel like we can treat money like a dirty word. So how did that kind of manifest in your journey where you were like, I'm asking for what I want. This is what I need. How were you able to kind of build that up for yourself?
Listen, you have to stop caring about what other people think when it comes to this particular question. Mm-hmm. When it comes to a lot of things, but this particular question, because society puts us in containers. These type of people are supposed to do this. These type of people can't do this. These type of people can be CEOs, right? We're all in these containers based on societal labels that have been prescribed to us that are narratives that unfortunately we tell ourselves because this is what society is reflecting back to us. I remember I went viral on Twitter talking about charging more for speaking engagements. Right? I said, academics should not charge less than $3,500 for a 1-hour talk. And this Black woman on Twitter told me, I would never even like view you as a colleague if that's what you're charging for speaking engagements. Honey, I charge more than that. And your internalized issues that you're projecting onto me has nothing to do with me, but a lot of times we internalize those types of things, right? There's no reason why you can't charge more. Like, who told you that? Academe told you that, right? But honey, I have a child, okay? I have a family. I'm trying to get somewhere. I'm trying to leave a legacy. And so a lot of times these offhanded comments that people make about who they think we should be and what they think we should be doing completely messes up our head.
Yeah.
Right? Completely destroys our imagination and what we think we can be. And I'm tired of it, really. Like for real.
No, I feel you. I feel like for me, a pivotal moment was honestly working for a white man. That really changed my perspective around money because he did not blink to fight for me. For raises or promotions, et cetera. And so that was really like the pivotal moment where I was like, oh, okay, I gotta tap into that. So I kind of have this joke with myself that I'm always like tap into my inner white man, which sounds terrible.
No, but that's a method for you to use to not limit yourself based on who you are and what society is telling you you should and should not have. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you say that because years ago when I was trying to figure all this stuff out, anytime I would get a speaking engagement offer, I would ask my close friends who are also Black women, what should I charge? What do you charge? No. Because all the black women are undercharging themselves. So I'm asking another black woman who's already undercharging herself. I started telling people, don't ask your black woman friends. Ask a white man what he charges. And then that's what you say you want. Right?
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, money is a tool to live the life that you want to live, to get the things that you want, to reach your dream and vision. If you don't think it is, then this is not the book for you, and I am not the person for you. But where I'm trying to go, based on a society that I didn't create, is freedom. And it is so close for me. Like, it's like right there. So, you know, I can just break through some of those labels and barriers. And I'm very conscious of the labels that people speak over me. Like, get away from people that are speaking certain labels over you, and don't speak them over yourself.
And yeah, those limiting beliefs, because a lot of times people are projecting onto you their own limits, right? So even that person on Twitter, oh, I can't believe you would charge that much, just because they can't fathom asking for what they actually deserve, right?
And so the crazy thing is, you know, I operate in a lot of different communities. Mm-hmm. I am in the creative community. My co-working space is for creatives, right? I'm with the people with PhDs. I see these creatives going out here doing speaking engagements about mental health. They don't have master's degrees. They don't have PhDs. They're charging $5,000, $10,000. Then I got my PhD friends over here. You got a whole PhD in mental health charging $500. I can see it because I operate in both areas. But before I operated in this creative entrepreneurship space, my eyes were not open. It is really true. The people around you help you see outside the box. It's very hard to see outside the box if you don't see other people doing something. You have nothing to compare it to. That's why, you know, my hat goes off to people that come from certain neighborhoods and come from certain situations, but they were able to see something beyond it without seeing it in person. Like, those types of people that can believe in themselves and believe they can reach something that they haven't seen in person. Amazing. Some people call that delusional, but amazing.
It's a healthy amount of delusion. So that really speaks to me to this. For those that are listening, the book is really broken up into three different sections. And so, you know, I feel like mindset, it really is the first section, and it really speaks to a lot of what we represent here, even at Permission to Write, right? Permission to Write is this idea of giving yourself permission to say that you're a writer. I think that, you know, I wanted to ask you if you could recall pivotal moments for you where changing your mind unlocked doors, because that is a lot of, to me, of what that section kind of explores. It's like, when you make this mindset shift, you'll be able to kind of move forward. So do you have moments like that you can think of?
Yeah, I think sometimes when you level up a little bit, your mindset is slow to catch up, because your mindset is still back in the you from last year. Mm-hmm. And you need to be aware that you leveled up a little bit and that your mindset has to catch up. Mm-hmm. And so a specific example would just be in my speaking engagement rates. Mm-hmm. You know, just saying, I'm going to turn down all of these offers that don't pay me my rate. Mm-hmm. And once I started doing that, I started enjoy speaking a lot better. Because when you undercharge yourself, the thing that you actually love to do starts to feel like you don't love to do it. And then you get confused, but really it's because you're undercharging yourself. So it's messing with your self-esteem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so once I started saying, this is my number, and you know, I have a booking agent now, this is my number, we're going to walk away from everybody else. Oh my God. Life is so much better in terms of that. Mm-hmm. Cause now I feel valued. Right. You feel better.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. You're so on point with like the things that like we say yes to, we're underpaid, and then you dread it.
Right. And then you're mad at yourself.
Yeah. Cause I have been there for sure.
Not a good feeling.
Oh, it is not a good feeling. I think I wanted to clarify those three sections. So I'm sorry, y'all. The first section is clarity. Part two is connection. And then part three is capital. So mindset is in the clarity part. I just wanted to make that that clear. But yeah, no, I think that you are so just on point. And even in the book, you talked about even having like a booking agent now, but I like how you talk about this idea of even a publicist, like a publicist can't build the brand for you. This is work that you're going to have to do for yourself, like regardless, mm-hmm. even though yes to outsourcing, yes to having, you know, mm-hmm. people in place,
yes.
Assistance and whatnot, but you have to get to that point.
Yes.
Even when you talk about in your media section that really focuses on podcasts, but can be applicable in a lot of other media areas, you talk about like, take some of the small podcasts because it'll just build up on, you know, your cachet essentially in the public space.
Yeah, you know, I work with clients all the time. They come to me, they're like, I know I need to do this social media thing. First question they ask, how can I outsource it? Who do you use? I don't use anyone. I create my content until you can't outsource something that you don't understand. You don't know who your audience is. You don't know the psychographics. You don't know the type of content they like. Honey, you got 2 years. You got 2 years and you got to post to figure that out. You got to get good at creating content so you can outsource it. So now when I hired an editor this year, I can tell him, this is how you got to edit the video, because this is how I've been editing it myself for the last 2 years. This is how you tell the story, right? You can't outsource something you don't understand. So listen, the book is hard work. My academic branding program, you put in the work, you soldier through it, you say you want the thing, and then you do the work required to get there. And I'm working harder than I've ever worked in my entire life. When I was doing my PhD, 23, 24, 25, I thought I was working hard. I thought that was hard work. What I am doing today, I am working harder than I've ever worked in my entire life. And I'm the best version of myself. I'm the most content. I'm the happiest. And I'm the most paid I've ever been in my entire life. But I got a VA. I got an assistant. I got an editor. I got it, right? I got all the people. But I'm still, right? Every day I have to do things I don't want to do. I think some people have this thing is like their version of where they're trying to get to is like they never have to do things they don't want to do. No, you're still going to have to do, every day you're going to have to do things you don't want to do. So yeah, I know I went off on a little tangent there, but.
No, well.
You got me hype on this John. You're from Philly, so you know what John is. Your people are like, what?
No. Absolutely. Absolutely. My John comes out at very unexpected times.
I try to keep my John locked in a box unless I'm talking to my Philly people.
Oh my gosh. I love that. So just a couple more questions here. One, I just loved this very simple statement from the book, but it says, if people do not know you, they cannot work with you. It is very simple, but feels so poignant. And there are so many moments like that in the book that are like, you're like, this is really straightforward, but like, dang, like, yes.
I love that.
And so, I just feel like, you know, that gets lost a lot in this kind of generation of like, we want all the opportunities, but, you know, how do you feel like when you talk about visibility for this book, how do you feel like what are some of the most important keys you feel like are a part of people knowing who you are?
Important keys for people to know who you are. Posting consistently on social media. Yeah, that's where people are. Just walk up the block. Everybody's on their phone. So you need to go where the people are. Posting consistently on social media. Running ads on social media. If you are not running ads, you are not running a business. If you're not running ads, you're not building a brand. Now, there are certain steps you need to take before you go spend money on ads, which the book will go over. But those are two things, posting consistently on social media, running ads, and showing up and talking to people. You know, with social media and Zoom, a lot of things can be done without you leaving your room. So many things can be done. I run an entire business without leaving my room, but sometimes you got to go outside, okay? And I'm not even necessarily talking about going to networking events, because I don't find networking events to be fruitful for me. They're usually like people that just don't talk to you unless they know you, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about talking to people and being outside, being on panels, showing up to a panel where people can see you and get to know your work, going into community spaces like co-working spaces and talking to people, just talking to people, because talking to people, you're putting dots on a board. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those dots connect for really big opportunities. Sometimes a dot can connect from somebody that you met. My very first ghostwriting job, was $40,000 I made for that job. That opportunity was from a friend that I knew from in DC when I was in my 20s. So here we are like 15 years later, the dot connected. So just talking to people and meeting people is good for visibility, but the more practical, actionable things, social media, running ads, showing up.
Showing up has been a theme out here lately by the wonderful Jay-Z, who talked about showing up too.
But it's a lot easier now, because you really don't, listen, you don't even have to be outside that much anymore. Seriously, like a lot of the biggest things I've gotten have been just from sending emails. I get to work with DMC from Run DMC and write his graphic novels and stage plays. And that was just because I sent him an email. Now, there's a method to my strategy of emailing, but I have so many examples of just emailing people, yeah. Not with, hey, here's my link, check out my work, mm-hmm. but with telling them how you can add value to their lives. Hey, I see you're trying to do X, Y, and Z, Daryl. I can help you get there, and here's how. Here are some samples of my work. The stuff about you should be at the very end and be one sentence.
I love that. You know, you give examples of some of that outreach in the book, which is gold, y'all. Because sometimes people tell you, you know, how to do things, but they don't share like the actual, like,
you get email examples, the exact emails I send, y'all. This is not no joke. There's no reason for me to hoard information. First of all, nobody reading the book can catch me because I'm already up here. And two, I'm a teacher. Yes. I can't know something and not share it. And if I'm teaching you and you do outpace me, that's great. I was a part of your journey.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we have to do that, especially as, you know, that is part of the reason this whole community exists. It's really like leaving the door open, right? Like we get through doors and we leave it open for people behind us. So with that being said, I feel like what is one important thing about the book that you haven't been asked? Just something that you, I always love to ask that, just like, you know, because as an interviewer, you pull out stuff that mattered to you. But I feel like as the creator, there's always something that you're like, no, this is the important thing that I want to make sure people know about this.
Psychographics. The way people think is really important to you selling things to people. Okay, Apple is not for everybody. Coca-Cola is not for everybody. We have a tendency when we want to get people to buy our coaching program or join our community, the first thing we want to say is it's for everybody. But you don't like everybody, and everybody doesn't like you. So your thing is not for everybody. And so when you can be very clear on who this thing is for and who it's not, then you can get down to the psychographics to speak the language, the attitude, the mentality of the people that you want to attract to your thing. Everybody shouldn't be in your community. You should be repelling the people that are not going to vibe with your community so that you can attract the people that should be there, that are there for you, right? You could be a whole celebrity to a small niche group of people and make six figures just by making 1,000 people happy. 1,000 people pays you $100 in one calendar year. That's six figures.
Yes, your 1,000 true fans.
That's right. That's right. That 1,000 true fans helped me so much because it gave me a framework of something that is doable. Yo, that's doable. Stop trying to reach 1,000,000 people. Because the thing is, when you focus on a very small slice of people, you can get to 1,000,000. But you're so busy worried about people that don't care about you, when you should be worried about the people that are here right now, because those are the people that are going to tell their friends about you and their parents about you and everybody else.
Major key. Major key. So I love that. It's kind of zone in, focus. And really this book will help you all do that. Now, I guess in addition to that, do you still take one-on-one clients as well outside of like in the Power Your Research program?
Yeah, so the Power Your Research program is a high ticket program for people with master's degrees and PhDs. And the real niche audience is professors with tenure. A lot of the people that come to Power Your Research are actually looking to transition out of higher ed. How do I make more money so that I can get free and get free? So all those little different segments, and you get one-on-one coaching with me within the academic branding program. But for my creatives and people outside of that target audience, I do one-on-one coaching in my Patreon community. It's always sold out. I cap it at like 8 because it's just too much for me to do. But it's $50 a month for these creatives to have a one-on-one call with me once a month. And I can work with a small number of people every month. And so for those that are looking for an alternative to kind of the academic piece, that's where you can find me too.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, I love it. You make sure you all go out and grab the book. It'll be available February 27th. So pre-order, all that good stuff. Let's support our folks. That is going to support you. So I love books that give back, give something back.
Going to help you, yo.
Exactly. So we like to round out our show with two segments where one, we call it the canon. So this is really all about highlighting other writers or I would say like maybe folks in academe that you might want to highlight. I like to alter it depending on who the guest is.
Right.
But we like to look at it from three different lenses. So we have online or public persona, writing voice, or word choice. So I'm going to ask you for a person in that field whose online persona or public persona that you admire or that our audience should check out.
Now, does it have to be a woman?
No.
Okay. No. An online persona that you should check. The first one that comes to mind, this person is a content creator, but he writes these amazing carousels, and he's actually very inspirational in the carousels that you all love on my Instagram page. His name is Mahdi Woodard. Oh my goodness. Mahdi Woodard. If you got to follow Mahdi Woodard on Instagram, he gives you the game. He's helped me to figure out Instagram without even meeting this man. And he's very heavy on carousels. For those of you that don't know what carousels are, they're when you swipe on Instagram, the still images, you get 10 of them on Instagram. But if you are into writing, you can really engage with your audience with these carousels. And that's a big part of how I'm able to really connect with my audience is through these carousels. I created my own format for my carousels to tell the story. And so that's what I would say on that front.
I love it. How about for writing voice?
Man, I don't read a lot. I know that sounds crazy, but I run two businesses. I'm a single mom. I have a full-time job. And so I read out of necessity. So I read to write my own books. So it's like, but one writer that I really like, her name is Regine Sawyer. She actually runs a really nice community called Comics New York City Collective. She does so much for writers and writers of color. I always like to have her on my team when I have big writing projects and things like that. She's been in the game for a while, a wonderful person. And so I would say Regine Sawyer, she's building a community. She's a writer, she's an editor, and just an amazing creative all around.
Love that. And then last one is, this might be tricky too, because it's still in the reading realm, but the last one is word choice. Like, is there a writer whose word choice you just absolutely fawn over, past or present? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be anything you're reading right now.
Audre Lorde all day. Ain't nobody gonna replace Audre Lorde.
Listen, because we are still quoting her at every turn.
Audre Lorde, yo. Oh, like, God. I just, Zombie, her book Zombie, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sister Outsider, I revisit like once a year. That book is all highlight. It inspires my thought process. She gives me a method to do this. She gives me a way to do this when you need courage. When you like, We are living in the best time in history. And I think people forget this because everything is so anxiety written because something happens on the other side of the world and we know about it. Yes. But I think about these people like Audre Lorde and even Toni Morrison and just all these writers that were writing back then that did not have the tools that we have. They did not have the tools that we have. They could not just log onto an app and possibly reach a million people or even just 100 people. They did it without all of this stuff. And to me, just looking back at those people and be like, yo, they did it when they didn't even have the tools and the resources that we have right now. That's inspiring to me.
Beyond. Well, I love it. We'll make sure to highlight all those writers in our show notes so you could check them out because it is all about expanding your canon. And then last but not least, we have our writing cliches segment. So this is going to be a bit of a lightning round. So I just want to know yay or nay for these writing cliches.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So writing every day, yay or nay?
Nay. Oh, my goodness. Can I elaborate on this for 1 second? Nay, yes. Nay. Listen, it's so funny. I know we're supposed to be ending. It's so funny because I always say I don't write every day. And the people that tell the successful writers that say they write every day or tell you that you should, they have the privilege to do that because they do this full day. Like, right? They have the privilege to sit and write every day. Mm-hmm. Us little regular people, we got jobs, we got families, we got 3 jobs, we got 4 jobs. We're driving for Uber and Instacart and trying to write. And so I did this little experiment on Patreon where I was like, hey, guys, I'm going to write every day for 30 days. And I was like, I'm going to update y'all every single day. Painful. Yes, I did have more output because I was forced to write every day, but it didn't feel good. Right. It didn't feel good. It felt unnatural. So nay.
I love that.
No, when I get the privilege to do that, the vision I'm trying to get to is I want to be a writer full time. Yes, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
probably.
I always say like some type of writing. I think sometimes we think it has to be like a project, you know what I mean? Whereas like, I just tend to do a lot of different forms of writing.
Yeah, I write responses to Instagram every single day.
Exactly. How about write drunk, edit sober?
Nay. Well, I don't drink, so that's kind of, I know.
makes sense. You cannot draft and edit at the same time.
Yay. Yes. You can't. Well, whatever the interest was, no, you can't do it at the same time.
Love it. Show, don't tell.
Yay. Yay. For the most part.
Kill your darlings.
Nay. It depends. I would say nay for the most part.
I love that. That goes either way. And then the last is somehow most controversial. The Oxford comma.
The Oxford comma? What's the Oxford comma?
So it's the comma before the and or not.
Oh, you know what? I do use the comma before the and.
Okay.
Years ago, I didn't, but the little Grammarly always corrects me and puts the comma there. I think it's Grammarly because I use Grammarly.
Well, it's weird because in journalism, you don't use an Oxford comma.
You know what? This is why I'm a writer, not an editor.
Yeah, in some of the styles, I should say, whether it's like AP or something like that, one of the like common journalism styles, you don't use an Oxford comma, where in a lot of other writing you do. So Grammarly, I don't know what Grammarly is basing it off of. So it's optional, really, that comma.
But this is why I hire editors, because I'm just a writer.
I love it. No, absolutely. It makes sense.
Because I don't want to know all of those. It's too much to know. Because it's a lot of little things like that.
Too much to know, for sure. I listened. My debut novel, I almost had a panic attack when I got my first edit letter. But we made it through.
Y'all. Oh, yeah. You know what I'm at? Yeah, because, yeah. Them notes from the editors be having you wanting to cry. I know, Lord.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Permission to Write podcast. We are wishing you all the best in the rest of the journey. Of course, check out previous books from Sheena Howard and also Academic Brandon, which is going to be everywhere on February 27th.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Permission to Write podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Plug into our community that works to cultivate and amplify the voices of Black writers and writers of color by visiting permissiontowrite.com. We'll see you next time.